Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Hello.
How's it going?
Doing all right. I've been busy with, I saw a premiere open. I'm looking at my timeline now. It's filling in. I'm probably through most of the most difficult parts of the Switchers episode. But it's not the most pleasant thing in the world. I'll looking at this view right here, you would suspect nothing was wrong. But if I just take my webcam over here and you can see, I've got my systems out of place. I've got wires all over the floor, a bunch of different switchers, and it's, it is one of the more, painful episodes to make, I think, but I'm glad that it's going to be over with. And it's actually good timing because I've been planning to rearrange my setup anyway. So, it's not so bad that I'm uprooting all my wires and systems and stuff. So it'll all work out in the end, but right now it's just like, I want this to be over.
Yeah. Really quick, we're joined by Kurt from Hardcore Gaming 101. Are you the creator of the site, the original?
Yes. Yep.
When you thought of the name Hardcore Gaming 101, like, I mean, it's such a perfect name for a website.
Really? I've always been kind of embarrassed about it. Like,
really?
Even when I started up, like, I gave it kind of like a really goofy word art logo because it was kind of like it comes off a little bit pretentious, I think, but it was supposed to be kind of tongue in cheek too.
Right. I mean, it definitely makes sense because it's like it sort of takes you through sort of the series that you know, most people maybe haven't even heard of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every time I hear a little bit about, oh, like Valis, what's that? You know, let me look up the article on Hardcore Gaming 101. I don't even need to guess. Is there an article about this series that I haven't really heard that much about? Is there an article on Hardcore Gaming 101 that takes me through the whole series and everything I need to know? I don't even need to ask. It's just there. I just search for it. It's there. And that's what I love about, you know, the most recent article that I found really useful was a few months ago. I'm just now starting to get into PC Engine stuff. And that's
I went through a phase of that a couple of years ago.
that's a rabbit hole, an expensive one, which is why PC Engine, not TurboGrafx, because it's less expensive.
Yeah.
But I was looking on eBay at this bundle auction that had the Japanese version of Bonk One and Legend of the Valkyrie, both of which were games I wanted. But there was also this third game that I hadn't heard of, that it had a number 2 on it, and I tried to figure out, what is this? And I don't even know how you pronounce this, but it's like Shibubin Man?
Oh, yeah, that was Shockman.
Shockman in the U.S., it was the only one. The second game was the only one that came out here is Shockman. Yeah. But then there was there were 4 games. So I looked it up and I'm like, this, you know, I read the article. I'm like, this sounds pretty interesting. So I was like, it was a good deal just for Bonk and Legend of the Valkyrie. So I'm like, okay, well, this third game sounds like something I might like too. So,
You played through, you finished it, right?
No, I played through Bonk, but Voltar's got my PC Engine for RGB modding right now. So right. I just tested Shibubin Man.
Shibubin Man.
I don't even know how to say it. Shibibi Man, something. I don't know.
But you know, it's actually, I don't know if you were thinking about this when you chose the game tonight, Corey, but by far, without a doubt, my most referenced Hardcore Gaming 101 article is the Goemon article, because I've been a fan of the series since I started with the 3D platform, or the first one that came to N64. And then, you know, Goemon's Great Adventure after that. And then I went back and played the Super Nintendo one, this one where you're going to be playing tonight. But, I mean, the depth of that game's just how many entries in the series there are only in Japan is absolutely staggering. And it was actually like the first games that I really... I had like a copy of Final Fantasy V that at the time was kind of just a novelty for me to have, but I never really played it in my Super Nintendo. When I started importing the Super Famicom Goemon games, that was like the first time that I was like importing games to actually play the imports and really got into it. Importing games. And so I was just going back and forth to that article constantly, like, okay, which ones do I want to get? You know, I want to avoid the RPGs because there's no translation patches for them. And you know, so I finally think pretty much got all the Goemon games that I'm interested in. But yeah, it's been a great reference.
Oh yeah, thanks. I started off with the Super Nintendo game. I didn't get a Super Nintendo until late, like after I got a PlayStation, I think, or around the same year, like 97 or so. Because I was a Genesis kid, and then I had a computer in the mid-90s. So I was more like Doom and Command & Conquer that for a while. But we got a Super Nintendo at Funko Land for cheap. And it was a good time to get into it because every place was selling all the games for like 10 bucks. So I got into Mystical Ninja. And then when I started getting importing games... the first one I got was Poppin' Twinbee, I think, and then I started getting all the RPGs, or all the Super Famicom games, which was a little tough because at the time I understood absolutely no Japanese.
But still, you're thinking about, you know, Square has such a big presence on the system and in Japan, so I mean, you'd play their games here and be like, oh, I just want to have it.
Yeah. At the time, it was like there was no guides and anything. I didn't know what any of them were. They were expensive too, because like eBay was first starting to come around there. I mean, I'm sure I probably paid like $60 or $70 for these. So I still have them like in box, and some of them ended up being like kind of duds. Like Goemon 3 is definitely like an RPG, so it's hard to play.
The Super Famicom one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a friend who understands Japanese help me through that one. I mean, it was a fine game, but yeah, it's not something. It's very much the template for the N64, the first N64 game.
Oh yeah,
the structure of the games is almost identical, but the problem is, yeah, you need to know where to go. And I was surprised how much the fourth Super Famicom one, how much it. Really kind of had that side questy, you know, you got to fulfill these requirements, that you got to get something that some character wants. And I was just like, oh man, I just want to run and jump, you know? I mean, like the second one on Super Famicom is easily the most import friendly. And in my opinion, I think the most fun of the Super Famicom entries.
Like, I think the fourth one is overall the best, but at the same time, yeah, like, getting past any of those towns and all the different fetch quests you had to do. Like, I haven't actually played it through in, like, probably since the late 90s, like, all the way. But
yeah, the other thing about the fourth one is that literally every single boss, including the final boss, is a minigame.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a weird thing. But I like the fourth one, but I definitely think the second one is just really fun. And I also think it's like one of the best things about the Goemon games is just how goofy and off the wall they are. And I think that one definitely just has the goofiest presentation overall, because it's like this this army invading Japan, and they are all the generals wear these bunny suits, and it's so stupid. Right. You're in these like robot battles, and you see their face appear on the screen, and they've got this bunny suit. It's just so stupid, but I love it.
I know, and it was great because it seemed like so few, especially Super Nintendo games, had that sort of like comedy about to them, like a good sense of humor.
Right. I would say really it didn't. I mean, you know, you've got stuff like Earthbound, but for the most part, that kind of stuff was, you know, mostly relegated to a select few RPGs, I would say. I mean, yeah, there was some comedy, but I feel like games didn't push for experimenting to be a little funnier until, you know, maybe the N64, PS1 era, you know, where story heavy stuff kind of took more, came more to the forefront.
Yeah, well, even like back in the early 90s, I was once they were still playing with the idea of a main character like having a defined personality. Like the fact that Sonic the Hedgehog would like sit and tap his foot and stare at you if you didn't do anything, like that was a big deal. Yeah. So then you had these Mystical Ninja games would just go completely bonkers. Especially the Famicom had two RPGs, the Gaiden games, which made them more story focused, and they sort of carried that over to the later games a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and start. I mean, there's a lot of people saying like I've never seen the cutscene of this game with two people just talking. So I mean I have this game. I've never really played very far into it. I rented it when it came out. Maybe it obviously wasn't when it came out because it came out before I had a Super Nintendo. But, I mean, shortly after I got a Super Nintendo, this is one that I rented. We'll see how I do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It gets hard, but it's not that bad. Also, thank you, the importer.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he says in his comment there, we hit it happened very suddenly. I still kind of can't believe it, but we hit $1,000 dollars a month on Patreon. It's
kind of crazy. Which is
insane. Nice. Really insane.
Really quick, I saw some people talking earlier about the Saturn episode. The Saturn isn't going to be our next episode. It's going to be our next RGB 200 episode. So our kind of our schedule is Tri's working on a episode about switchers right now, like SCART and component switchers. And then we have a secret episode that's coming from me that we are not at liberty to talk about publicly.
We might be able to talk about it before it releases, yes. But we don't know.
We definitely will. We might be able to talk about it this week. I think that he's trying to get it so it's announced this week.
Okay.
And then after that, after I finish with that episode, I'm going to go directly into the Saturn episode.
Mm-hmm.
So then, and that's, so Saturn will probably be sometime in May at the earliest.
Yeah, sometime in May, probably.
Yeah. And then you're going to do, your next 200 is going to be PS2.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably going to be July is my current thinking. But you
it's
know,
a good month
you
for
know
it.
How you know how these things go. I'm thinking July. I think I've kind of got my next two planned. I don't want to say what they are yet, though.
Yeah, I mean, we have several things planned. But it's pretty funny because you know, we reached that. The $1,000 on Patreon was a goal for us, you know, to say we'll do more mini documentaries. So it's kind of good timing that.
Right, because we already kind of got one in the works. Like
the secret episode is a mini doc that nobody is expecting, and I think that people will be pleasantly surprised. I gotta stop hitting the women and losing $100.
But yeah, so we kind of got a little ahead. You know, we were kind of coming up toward $1,000. We were in the 900s when we decided to take a trip, and so we were technically under our goal where we said we're going to do more documentary type stuff. But we really kind of couldn't have done this one at any other time.
Yes, it is a hugely awesome opportunity.
Yeah,
and so really we just kind of fell on our lap.
Yeah, so we were like, we can't say no to this. We're not making quite as much on Patreon as our goal, but we're still going to invest some money into this because it's going to be super awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I just finished the credit sequence for it yesterday.
Yeah, that was great.
I'm excited. You know, it was kind of the same way with Limited Run, where I made this credit sequence kind of before I even had the script like written.
Kind of gets you hyped up.
Well, it gets you hyped up, and it also kind of gets you in a mindset for this is the kind of style that I want to go for throughout this thing. So it kind of informs the writing of it, I think.
Right. It sort of also reinforces, I think, to you, like, this is special. This is different.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what I think is kind of fun about it, is that, you know, our documentary stuff, it's outside of the realm of, like, a normal episode for us. So we can kind of do a special intro that's, like, slightly longer in its own style.
Are we calling this one a mini-doc, or are we calling it a showcase?
I think that it's going to end up being a mini-doc.
Okay.
I mean, as much as... We'll see. I mean, I think it's going to end up being a mini-doc. I wasn't sure about it until I cut the interview, and I feel like that kind of fits into a documentary kind of style. I mean, it's, you know, we have interviews with three different people.
Yeah. And it's just going to be you in the episode in terms of us, because...
Right, and I'm going to be very... My presence is going to be very light.
Yes.
You could, if you, run into the girls.
Uh-huh.
If you run, you'll save them and get some of the SE.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Here I was, like, trying to avoid them. I mean, I'm just, like...
If you go, like, up and then to the right, it takes you to the first level. Like, there's nothing really you need to do in here unless you wanted to buy, like, some armor and stuff.
Yeah, like, these sections are pretty much just you kill enemies to get some gold, and then you can get, like, armor, or the little shoes make you run faster.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, like, the pizza and you lose them if you die, right?
Yeah, well, they get used up automatically. Like, every time you get hit, you get, like, your equipment gets downgraded.
Right, so it's basically like a free hit rather than...
Yeah, but that could come in handy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely what, like, the first level here isn't too hard, but later on, like, you definitely need those extra hits.
Yeah. Most levels, like, the overhead area is kind of just for powering up. I mean, there's not, like, the main gameplay is the 2D stuff. Except I want to say it's level 3, maybe, that's all overhead.
Yeah, that's the really short one, isn't it?
It's like the fairgrounds or something, I think, if I'm remembering right.
The fairgrounds are just, yeah, actually, is there a, I don't think there's a side-scrolling level with that one.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's been probably like 9 or 10 years ago that I played through this game. I've only played through the entire game once.
Yeah. I played through this a month or two ago, and I forget how far I got. It's a level with a waterfall.
Oh yeah, that one, I think that's where it starts to get pretty tricky.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, wasn't the boss like a bear or something there?
I remember, I think it had like one or two forms, and since I had got killed and I had to restart the level with no health or anything, then I just didn't get it. Yeah. I took a picture of my password and just tweeted out, like, if anybody wants to continue my game, go for it.
Yeah, this is not one of my favorite Goemon games, but I mean, it's, you know, one of the very precious few that we did, you know, get an American release for.
Yeah, I like that they actually tried to introduce the Goemon series with this entry, and outside of, like, changing the name of the main characters and, like, they kept most of the Japanese stuff, other than, like, they changed whatever the food item was into pizza. But other than that, like,
what did the scrolls
kept
do?
Everything. Okay, I never knew this for a long time because it's a little obscure, but they're for these special judo attacks. But you can't use the special attacks until you get taught them. So you need to find a special place in one of the stages and then pay a certain amount of money. And then they'll teach it to you.
But not on this first stage, right?
I actually did not know that for a long, long time. So you'd end up getting all these scrolls and then had no idea what to do with them. But this game is kind of like that. Like, there's so much optional stuff in this game. Like, on almost every level, you can just, like, go to the side-scrolling section and then just try to beat it. And then the game will just let you go on. But the real meat of the game is, like, how open-ended it is and how much just different goofy stuff that you can screw around. And I think that was the real appeal of this, because that was something that they started with, like, the second Goemon game. Because the first one is, it's kind of long and repetitive. And the second one is sort of built on the same template, but they just had levels where they have, like, first-person mazes and, like, bathhouses and just all sorts of weird stuff that you can do. And this one just, they build on that by putting in mini-games and... A lot of it is just, like, ways to get more money than just grinding.
Right.
You know what I think about this a lot. You know, with older games, I think that people have a mindset now that they can, like, kind of blow through it. And I think that I've had to retrain myself over time to just kind of take my time through each level. Yeah.
Right. You can't hit her directly. You have to hit the things back at her.
Oh, I see.
Those little frisbees or whatever.
I died anyways. Is that my last life? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can go back to the elephant. That is, like, the midway point.
I see. And it had a 1 next to it, so does that mean I can only continue from it once?
No, that just means it's like the first elephant. It's like in later levels when there's more than one checkpoint, you can just choose which checkpoint to go back to.
I see. Is there unlimited continues?
Yeah, but like I was mentioning earlier, you end up getting stripped of all your items and money. So unless you got like you get a password, not from when you continue, I think, but if you visit a certain store or a certain person. So if you re-input the password, then you'll end up with all your items. Because there's long passwords in this game. Like, they keep track of more than just your level, but, like, all your items and gold and stuff.
Man, it's... There we go.
It's a little tricky for a first boss.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I got a game over. And then from the end of the previous journey is where I can continue from.
Yeah.
Okay, so that starts me from...
basically just restarting the game, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can just go straight there now that you know where it is, basically.
Yeah. How many times... So I got to continue from the... You only do it with when you lose a life. So, okay, yeah. So when you run out of lives, then you start the level over. Okay. Got it. I just got to get a feel for it.
Yeah, it's... You know, it's definitely a game that takes a little time to settle into.
Yeah. Oh. Well, you know, it's all right, though. So the switch was like, go ahead.
The up there, that little area, like, you can't enter it now, but when you come back, if you clear the level of ghosts, that's like a maze that you can explore. And that was a little picture of Konami Man, who was their kind of mascot that he had appeared. He had his own game.
Yeah, Wild World.
Yeah, he was also in Goonies, too. I mean, I'm sure that he popped up in other places. That was only in Japanese media, but...
Yeah, I thought for a long time that Konami Man was the characters in YY World 2. But I forget what they are, but those are not Konami Man.
Yeah, that's just his name is like Rikaru. Well, at least the red one. Like, they just made him up for the game, I think.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, wait, Konami Man looks a lot lamer than the random characters in YY World 2. Yeah, I've not played YY World 1.
I knew that was
going to be only 2.
Oh, the second one is much better than the first
one. Yeah, it's... But so some friends of mine played the first, and they said that it was very...
You actually move faster if you crawl. I think you actually, like, move. Like, it's faster than running.
That's one of the fun things about the series is that they have, like, really goofy crawling animations.
Oh, yeah, especially the other guy, Ebisumaru.
I don't remember what he does in this game, but I remember in, like, the first N64 game, at least, I forget about Great Adventure, but he like, crawls on his... He, like, gets on his back and, like, inches along.
Yeah.
Great Adventure is, like, really freaking hard. Like, I beat that game back when it first came out, and I did not remember it being that hard.
Is that the 64 one?
That's the 64 one. Platformer. The, or the 2D platformer. The first one on N64 is, like, you know, more of a Mario 64 type of perspective. And it's pretty easy, but Great Adventure, like, I feel like back in those days, like, I'd kind of gone a little soft, and I was not acclimated anymore to the NES level of difficulty. And I feel like I would remember that game being that hard, because I beat it, like, you know, when it came out. And I was probably, like, I don't know, like 16 or something when it came out, probably, and I beat it. But then I revisited it Because I wanted to get 100% in it. I did that probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe. And it was really hard. It just gets brutal. I mean, great game, something... but it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, you can't take very many hits, I think, right? Like 3 hits by normal?
Yeah, I think is not too uncommon in the Goemon games, but it's brutal. Like the levels are just really tough. It's a good game though.
Yeah. The thing I remember about that being a little weird is like the 2.5D games are always like something slightly off about it. And it always felt like the jumping was like a little bit too quick. Like they had too much gravity.
I could see what you mean by that.
I did it.
All right.
Yeah.
The Ninja Cat Kurobe?
Yeah.
Yeah, he appears in some of the games. Never as a major player, but...
Yeah, this game has, like, a lot of the other characters that were introduced into the later games. They're just in, like, these sort of storyline roles.
Yeah.
$100? Yeah.
Like, isn't Yae in this one, except she's got blue hair?
Yeah, that's before she was really, like, a character. But, yeah, she's in this.
I don't think Sasuke is in this.
He is, but he's just kind of like the Clockwork Ninjas. Like, I don't know if this is specifically him.
Oh, isn't there, like, a boss fight where you fight him in this? Or is that the second game?
No, it's this one. It's like
where he's, like, on, like, a kite?
Yeah, it's those guys. I love that level because, like, the little... I think it's them. They're like running and then they trip and then they spill their tea and then the tea hits you get hurt.
Yeah, this is starting to sound familiar now. Yeah.
So is this just restore my energy? Is it even worth it? It doesn't matter.
What you need to do now is find the travel agency. When you were playing through before, I think you found it. They said that they were closed. Do you want to play any games? Blah,
blah. They're in Great Adventure. I know that the restaurants have like each restaurant has like one item that gives you an extra life, but it doesn't advertise that it does that. And at least I think it was Great Adventure that did that. And so now I'm like always wondering like if in the other games they're like if they have that. I haven't played through any of them yet, but I did get all 4. PlayStation games, which is going to be interesting, especially for some of the early ones, because I mean I'm just gonna have to use a guide because I mean I don't know any Japanese. I think the first one is probably going to be the trickiest because that one appears to be fairly similar to the Super Famicom 3. Just at a glance. The second one, I know the Hardcore Gaming 101 article. I don't know if you wrote that article.
Yeah, it was a joint effort between one of the other editors. But yeah, I had written like the core of it, and that game is terrible.
Yeah, I remember. But it's so fascinating because it's 480i, and I forget if it might also be 60 frames. I forget.
It is. It's like from a technical perspective.
Surreal, like it's just,
but it's like it's falling apart at seams. There's so many gaps in between the polygons. Like I don't know how it got released in that state.
it's interesting though. Like I've not done anything more in it other than just like run around the.
Are you talking about? Is it the PS2 one?
For some.
Or no?
PS? No. PS is the second game on PS1. It's 480i in 60 frames. It's kind of unusual from a technical perspective. The PS2 game does look pretty bad. I've never played it, but it does look pretty bad.
It was a launch window, I think. Mm-hmm. PS2 game, and it definitely looks it. And it was still at the time where they hadn't quite gotten the hang of camera control. I don't know. Like I found it a lot more awkward to play than the N64 game.
Mm. I mean, the N64 game was my introduction to the series, and I'm a bit of an N64 fan anyway, so that one's pretty easy for me to accept.
Between that Castlevania were the reasons I bought my Nintendo 64. Like Mario, Zelda, who cares? Mystical Ninja and Castlevania. Well, that's where it's at.
I mean, it's interesting to hear you say Castlevania because not many people like the Castlevania games on N64, but I think they're pretty good.
I didn't really like it, but I had a Castlevania website, so I need to play it.
I have your Castlevania book.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting game because it, in some ways, like the action, the platforming is sort of a similar sort of challenge to the earlier Castlevania games, and it's really the only 3D Castlevania game that tried to truly be a platformer. Now, whether people think it succeeded at that or not, you know. But it's an interesting game. I kind of like them.
It has like highs and lows because it starts off very badly. Like the first level is just really boring. Sorry, but some of the other platforming levels it starts to get like pretty all right. Like it has its own issues with just as being a Nintendo 64 game, the slowdown and kind of sketchy controls. But overall, it's not that bad.
Oh man, there's someone in the chat saying never played a Castlevania. Where to start? That's a question that pops up everywhere all the time, and that's just
really
that is such a hard. Oh yeah, I mean, people have asked me that a bunch of times. I see that question come up all the time, and that's just like such a hard thing to answer because it really kind of boils down to, are you into, very difficult platformers that are going to kill you a lot, or are you into a Metroid game except with like stats and leveling up and stuff?
I'd still just say Dracula X for PC Engine and Symphony of the Night are the two best entry points because those are like the two defining, in my opinion, of the two main branches of the series.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, and they're directly connected too, which is nice.
Yeah. Rondo was kind of, I almost see it as like the swan song of the original style.
Yeah.
It was kind of the point where it was I arguably perfected. Of course, that one can be a difficult entry point if you're trying to play on real hardware, but it is available on Virtual Console, if nothing else.
I like the PSP one. Like the like, it definitely has its issues.
Yeah.
But as far
it's
as the remake
yeah,
goes,
it's not bad. Yeah,
like
it's
I mean,
bad.
It is. It's kind of ugly in the same way that a lot of other PSP games were, and it's like stuck at 30 frames a second, and but they fleshed out a lot of other stuff from that game. Like, they added some texture to the backgrounds. There was one level that was never finished, but they kind of included as a bonus in the PC Engine level, or PC Engine game, that they kind of made a real level in the PSP version.
Yeah, I played through it, but I don't remember specifically the difference.
The best thing about, though, is, like, the Dracula battle in the game is just really easy for some reason. And in the PSP one, they added like a whole other form that actually makes the fight like reasonably difficult.
Really? I haven't finished the PSP version.
Yeah, I don't. I played both versions, but I don't remember that specifically. I think though that when I'm recommending like a starting point for like the old style Castlevania, I think I tend toward recommending Castlevania 4. It's not as brutal as the NES games, but
yeah,
it's kind of weird. Like it's a very early Super Nintendo game, and I think it is almost more ambitious than it should be for such an early game. Like they're trying to play around with the rotation effects and all kinds of crazy stuff. But yeah, at the same time, like even though it's got a lot of slowdown, it mostly succeeds in its ambitions.
Yeah, it's like for a launch era game, like it's actually extremely well done.
Yeah, it's got, I mean, like the music is like very unique for that era of gaming because it's so atmospheric and, you know, not a lot of games really tried atmosphere at that time.
Yeah.
If I learn the jujitsu in a zone, do I keep it even if I continue?
I want to say yes, but I'm not entirely sure.
If I'm gonna grind for the money,
because that's a lot of money. That's why I never got them, because it's a lot of money to get for that stuff. But then you actually put all those scrolls that you get to some kind of use.
Well, there's two packages. Let's see. My train. Let's see. I thought I wanted to do it. It gave me an option to get it before.
Oh, wait. What's your... Oh, your health isn't high enough. You need to restore your health. Because it actually, like, takes away some of your health when you do it.
Oh,
so if you have below the amount that would get you killed, he doesn't let you do it.
Jeez. Well.
Yeah, see, like, that's kind of like a core aspect of the game. You think they could just hide it behind all this kind of troublesome stuff.
These guys are...
Oh, those guys are such assholes.
Maybe it's easier if I just throw money at them.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
It'll save me. Well, I died. Oh.
Something.
Oh, God.
No, I was just going to say, I'm still thinking about Castlevania. Something I heard not long ago, and I'm not entirely sure if this is true, because I actually only just got the Japanese version of Castlevania 3 a couple months ago. I'd wanted that version for a long time, but in part, just so I would have like a cartridge audio game to test out for, you know, when we need it for certain episodes on the show. But something I didn't know about it, and like I say, I'm still not 100% sure this is true, but I heard that it is easier than the American version. Do you know if that's correct?
It is definitely correct. Because Castlevania 3, the amount of damage enemies do is entirely determined by the level you're on.
Right, that's what I thought, because by the final level, every enemy, even a bat, does, like, I think it's 4 damage. Like, you take, I think, 3 or 4 hits in the last level. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So they don't pull that crap in the Japanese version.
Yeah, it's all in on what enemy they are. And there are a couple of other tweaks, too. Like, Grant always has a throwing dagger instead of, like, the short stabby dagger, which is generally more useful. But at the same time, the short stabby dagger could be kind of good if you could get in close quarters and just do stab, 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 and then run away.
Yeah, I really, you know, once I get some free time, I should really play through it, because I feel like Castlevania...
How do I use the jujitsu really quick? Sorry, I don't mean that.
I think you have to, X, I think. It's one of the buttons on the controller.
Can you only use it in side-scrolling levels?
I don't know.
Because it's not doing anything right now. Then again, I only got the $400 one. I didn't get the $800 one.
Is it a limited use?
They're powered by the amount of scrolls you have, so... I mean, you've been collecting them pretty faithfully.
Yeah, I mean, they drop all enough. The time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was going to say, I feel like if Castlevania 3 weren't as brutal as it is, like, that last level is just... unfair with, I mean, just with how much damage everything does.
Oh, man. And I remember, I mean, I beat it when I was a kid, but I remember, like, it was one night where my parents were out and my babysitter was over, and, like, the whole night she was just watching TV.
You know, downstairs. Yeah. You
know.
Without interruption.
You could curse at the television, yeah.
But I kind of feel like if Castlevania 3 were not as difficult as it was, I feel like it would be my favorite.
There is, it's kind of, it's a very intimidating game, I found it, because it's very long also.
Yeah, it's
like
long.
Super Castlevania 4 is long, but it's also quite a bit easier.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to playing through the Famicom version.
It's definitely easier going.
It just sounds so, like, awesome on, like, with the real cartridge audio.
Yeah, it really does. And it's a shame that not many other games use it.
Yeah.
The other ones are RPGs. There's Esper Dream 2, which is actually really good. If you've never played it before, there's a fan translation out for it. And the other one
is that a Konami game?
Oh, yeah, they're all Konami games.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's some other companies that created sound chips. Like, there's a couple of Namco games that use them.
Right.
like Rolling Thunder, which is not really that impressive, but Megami Tensei 2 uses a Namco sound chip, which is really good.
It's a different version of Rolling Thunder than we got here, too. Than the Tengen one.
No, that one is the same, except for the sound chip.
Okay, okay.
There are a few others, like Gimmick. You know, the...
Yeah, I think, the Sunsoft one.
Is that the one and only Sunsoft chip game?
Yeah, this is the only one that has an extra sound chip with it.
Yeah, I know there's, you know, something I'm curious about now is... I don't know if it's really considered good, but I've been kind of curious, especially because I know it has a fan translation now. I've been curious about Lagrange Point.
That is a cool game. I mean, but, it's if you like Phantasy Star, then you'll probably like Lagrange Point.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, I've been curious because I've not really heard anything about it. And for some reason, I just had it in my head that that was like one of those super expensive games. And then, like,
it's not.
It's like $30, $35. Like, yeah. I think people just kind of put it up on a pedestal because it's the one VRC7 game.
It sounds really cool. Because there's like absolutely nothing else in the system that sounds like it.
Yeah, I might get into that.
I mean, it's still very much like an 8-bit RPG, like the concept of random battle stuff, but it's very well done.
I love random. I'm totally cool with random battles. Like, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, random battles are objectively bad and should never be in any game ever, and I'm like, it's fine.
For me, it kind of depends. Like, I've been playing Dragon Quest VI on the DS, mm-hmm. and, like, I really like the DS and the 3DS remakes of those games because they make them just so much faster. And
I kind of like the NES engine better. Like, I might just be because I didn't like Dragon Quest VII very much.
I don't blame you about Dragon Quest VII. That game is like, so long.
Yeah, it's like if that game were about a fourth of the length, it would be pretty good. But it's like the problem is it's like. I feel like they're at that point they were just like, man, anything we make will sell. We can just do anything we want. It's like whatever, and so they just like made this like ridiculously bloated game, and like it was just like, you know, the first
and it sold like crazy in
I'm
Japan.
Sure it did.
Isn't it like the best selling game in the series?
Is it?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
See,
in Japan,
like the way I always rationalize that is. When was Dragon Quest VI released? Like 95 or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then Dragon Quest VII was 99, 2000. Like, it took a long time for that game to come out. And that time, there were 3 PS1 Final Fantasy games at that point. I think they were just like, okay, this game must have taken... was taking too long. We'll make this game, like... the one Dragon Quest for the generation, and it'll be as long as 3 Final Fantasy games.
And it was.
And of course, when it came out over here, like, we never had the nostalgia for the series. Like, at the time, like, I had only, like, everybody had Nintendo Power as a kid and played the first Dragon Quest, which I didn't really like that much because I thought it was much worse than Final Fantasy.
I honestly never knew anybody that actually played through the Dragon Warrior that they were sent.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I am not that big of a fan of the first one, but I really like the NES versions of 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, like, I don't... This is just something about, like, the stodginess of... Well,
the thing with 1... I mean, the thing that gets me with 1 is the... Like, I respect 1. Like, I like what 1 was going for. I like how open it feels, but at the same time, it... There wasn't that much to the actual main quest. It was just kind of, you know, okay, kill a bunch of monsters until you've got enough money to buy this armor you want so you can go to the next town and then buy another piece of armor you want, you know?
Yeah.
It's basically the whole game. But I feel like, you know, there's much more substance to the other ones on NES that I really enjoy. But I have a great respect for Dragon Quest 1, but it is, you know, it's not a game that I like to just pick up and play. I'm interested in playing the Super Famicom version. I'm curious how
that
will feel.
You should try to get the tried the mobile ones because they, at least I got Dragon Quest III a little while ago, and that's actually based off the Super Famicom version of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that Dragon, it's much better. It's like roughly around Dragon Quest VI. That sort of sprite work and sound and stuff like that.
I really like how the Super Famicom version of 3 looks. Like, I haven't played through it yet, but it's like the battle backgrounds in particular are like awesome in that.
Yeah. That's one thing that disappoints me about the DS version of Dragon Quest VI, though, is that they did it in the same style as like 7 and 4 and 5, which I didn't really find that attractive. Where it's like Dragon Quest VI and the Super Famicom, like it looks good and the sound is excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think again with like the DS remakes, like I loved playing through those games, but at the same time, like I feel like I would have liked them even more if it wasn't using the Dragon Quest VII engine, just because I feel this like bias against Dragon Quest VII.
Yeah,
but like I loved 4, and I have not played through all of the NES version of 4 yet. I want to. I've got it, but the NES versions are my only experience with 2 and 3 so far. But I really liked playing those. I liked playing them on the NES, but actually I liked 4 the best of the DS of the DS games. Like I think when you get to the end of that and like the final boss in that is just like, I think it's maybe the coolest final boss in all of RPGs.
So that that level, I finished that level. There was like no side scrolling level at all to it.
But there was the side scrolling boss.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is the amusement park. This is the level you can play Gradius.
Oh yeah.
Oh really?
There's like a gigantic TV. There's like the biggest CRT ever made.
And is it like a full fledged game in there?
It's just the first level.
Oh, that's cool.
But they did that a whole lot. Like the second, the Super Famicom game, it has a playable level of ZexX, which at the time was really incredible because it had never gotten a home port. And it was the only way to like ZexX? Ever see anything about that game until Maymeta got it emulated. Yeah.
I always thought it was... I always think of the GameSack episode where they're talking about, they say, ZexX. No, I thought it was Xizxiz. But so that's like three different ways I've heard to say it.
Well, like in Japanese, like you always know how it's pronounced. Like it's there's no ambiguity. So that definitely helps.
So it's not Xizxiz.
Yeah, it's definitely ZexX.
Okay, well that's good. I thought for sure it was gonna be ZexX, because that just sounds more, I mean,
it does sound like more super outer spacey.
Yeah.
ZexX.
I mean, I always thought it was ZexX.
Yeah. Oh, that's the that one other Nintendo game. The one that has a completely different name in Japan. Where it's like your futuristic Taro Urashima. Or something weird like that. Spelled XEXYZ. It's put up by Hudson.
Okay, so that's what I was thinking.
And like it's
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was saying. ZexX.
Oh, okay. This is the Konami shooter ZexX.
Okay. Oh. Okay.
Oh.
I got confused too. Now I know you're talking.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about.
I thought you were talking about the Hudson game for some reason. I was like, well, maybe that wasn't.
Have you ever played the Konami shooter ZexX?
I haven't, but I know what it is.
Oh, you got a fire up meme at some point, because it's just a visual feast. Like, I can't believe the game was made in 1991, because it looks incredible.
Really?
Yeah, it's very, very much like Konami's take on R-Type. Interesting. The way it plays. The thing was, it had the unfortunate timing of coming out right as the Street Fighter 2 boom was picking up, which like Street Fighter 2 at the time, just the same way it kind of happened here, it just demolished everything else in the Japanese arcades at the time. So even though like ZexX was Konami's like going to be like its big holy grail shooter, it kind of ended up flopping. So as a result, it never got ported for a long time. It just kind of ended up being forgotten. until Maine brought it up. And then on the Salamander PSP collection, they stuck it on there.
I feel like the quiz here is going to be just about Konami games. Is it? Maybe.
It's probably about this game in particular. I can't remember for sure.
I have to answer somebody in the chat. Clono78. Yes, I have played Nier Automata, but not nearly as much as I should.
We neither of us have bought it yet, but we really want it.
Yeah, it's like I bought like all the major games that have come out, but like if only futz around. Like I was able to play for some Persona this week, but like I just got sick like earlier this week and just like I don't know. When I was younger, if I would get sick, I'd just be sick for a day. But now, I just like knock the shit out.
Answering these questions before the questions even typed out.
Because they're cheaters.
Is it impossible to win?
Oh, I have no idea.
Or do you just have to hit the button like right away and guess?
Oh, see, he got it wrong. I'm looking at the wrong stream. But yeah, I mean, I have Yakuza 0, I picked up Zelda, Nier, and Persona, and I played a bunch of Persona this week at least.
I just have to focus so hard on this episode. I'm madder than heck that I haven't played that yet, but I've got it, but I'm like, as soon as this episode is done, like I am just hitting that hard. Like I'm just going to binge on that for days on end. I can't wait, but Zelda, like me and Corey, like we kind of had, I think, a unique experience with Zelda because
so cool.
Like, because when we went to LA to do this documentary that we can't talk about yet, and you know, this was just a few days really after the Switch launch, and so here we are, like unexpectedly having this chance to, you know, test the travel potential of the Switch. And you know, we ended up with more free time, I think, in LA than we intended to originally. And so we're just like sitting in the hotel room, just like, oh man, I found this thing here. And like, it doesn't feel like we're talking about spoilers because it's so open-ended and so non-linear.
Yeah.
We're just kind of sharing information. It really, really felt like playing an NES game in so many ways, I think, because of that. Like, I didn't feel like, you know,
how do I get out of this? Can I leave?
You know, with most other games, like when you discover things, that it's kind of locked behind story progression and stuff, and so you can't really talk about it with other people without spoiling things. But with Breath of the Wild, I mean, just so it was a really cool experience to just like have that system in your hands with someone else in the same room playing the same game and just talking about it. You know, after the trip, both of us finished it pretty quick. I mean, we just, and you know, in the span of like, what would you say, like 2 weeks, we put like, you know, 60 to 70 hours into it.
Somehow. But I mean, it was just great because we could talk about it as, you know, say, hey, I found this. Oh, where on your map is it? It's a good way to kind of harken back to the original in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like a hint of talking about games on the playground again, you know?
Yeah. Come on, just end it. End this.
But I could have easily put in, you know, twice as much time into it. I mean, I felt satisfied with the amount of stuff I did. Like, I didn't really leave anything major that I really wanted to do that I didn't do when I beat the game. But I could have put in twice as much time. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we're... I had to say enough is enough. I'm going to beat the game or else, you know,
you just play it forever.
There would never be more episodes of my life in gaming ever again.
He's this Konami lady.
Oh yeah. There's the giant CRT.
Yep.
It's 16 by 9.
Oh, it's the future.
Isn't that like the coolest CRT?
It's pretty cool. Oh, this is... It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a good, kind of like a little bonus.
I wonder, like, how...
It's so bad at Gradius, though.
Like, how they made this run, because it's like still, like, within the Mystical Ninja engine, you know? Like, it's... Like, you still see the game frame around it.
Yeah, I mean, they probably would just be able to copy-paste some code from Gradius 3.
Yeah.
Because I'll do the graphics here, just take it from the arcade game.
Yeah.
Do you get anything if you beat the level? You win, like, money or anything?
Probably money, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, for some reason, I want to say it's totally pointless, but it's cool.
Yeah. Because it's just so impressive that they would have something like this, especially in a Super Nintendo game.
I can't remember if there were any cameos and random houses in this game, but I'm pretty sure it was like maybe going on 2 or 4 on Super Famicom. I forget. It had like some of them had like a lot of cameos. Like I know like Belmont is
this is the second one. They definitely have Simon Belmont and Sparkster, Rocket Knight. Which was interesting, because I think by the time that had come out, he might have only been a Genesis game.
Really?
Well, he started off in the Genesis, because he was supposed to be a Sonic-type character.
Right. Yeah, I guess... I don't really know the timeline of when Sparkster and Goemon 2 came out. That would be interesting, though. I mean, it's Konami, like, you know... Who cares? I mean, it's not like it's Sega's character, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for that matter, they put Cloud and Smash Brothers as DLC, and, you know, as far as Nintendo stuff he's been in, you can say, like, what, Theater Rhythm?
Yeah.
Maybe it.
So which one of these things restore health or take a hit for me?
None, but pizza will restore health, and straw sandals make you walk faster, and you can stack them, too.
What about the clock?
Oh, that just restores your time.
Oh. I mean, the pizza, will it restore my health after I, like, lose all my life?
I think so, yeah.
I'm gonna get 2 of those, then.
Yeah, like, whenever I play, like, I usually, build up gold and then, pick up some, armor. And I think you could do it without having to go in the... Or do you have to go into the pause menu to do it?
I can't choose
Clonellis7H in the chat is asking Kurt if you are planning to do an article on Suda51 games.
We have some of them. There's actually a article that's done and should be posted sometime this month. What else was there?
I mean, with Silver Case coming out on PS4, I guess it makes sense.
That game is like I picked up the limited run game Silver Case, and I tried the game, and it is just weird. It's like the way it's written is very strange. But yeah, that's coming up. I want to try to get the same author to do one for Flower, which has been available in English for a long time, but I think it's just one of those games that just puzzled everybody.
What was it?
Flower, Sun, and Rain.
What kind of game is that? I've heard the name, but I never really looked into it.
It's a Suda 51 game. That's the best way. It's kind of like a trippy adventure puzzle game.
Early on, I guess he did a lot of adventure games.
Oh, yeah. The first game he did, Twilight Syndrome, I think, is like a horror game. Have you played Danganronpa 2?
Yeah.
Okay, you know that one chapter where you're playing with like the different high school students arcade game? I think it's the second chapter.
Playing the arcade games?
It took place in like an arcade cap. And but yeah, that is based off of Twilight Syndrome and Moonlight Syndrome.
Interesting. I wouldn't have really thought of Suda as starting off with that kind of game. I have not played a ton of his games.
But yeah, he started out with those, and in that sense, it kind of makes sense. Killer7 was so restrictive, because when that game came out, everybody was really angry that, like, you couldn't actually walk around.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, in truth, I don't think I've actually played all the way through any of his games. I've, you know, like, experimented with Killer7, and I think I've played a little No More Heroes. But yeah, not a lot of times.
Doesn't direct them when he, like, a lot of times it's, like, attributed to him, but he doesn't direct.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really? Like,
yeah, the last he did was No More Heroes, I think.
Yeah.
But he definitely attaches his name to them. Like, stuff like Shadows of
Lollipop
the Damned
Chainsaw.
And Lollipop Chainsaw.
Which, like, I thought was...
They're,
I thought
the Grasshopper Protector. Yeah, they kind of became, like, his brand.
Yeah, right. I think I did know that he didn't direct those.
So, I mean, I felt like it was just, like, an idea he wrote down on a napkin one day, and then... yeah.
Is that, so there's a cutscene. Is that the end of the level again?
Yeah, that the third level in this game does not have any side-scrolling stuff.
Interesting. How many levels are in the game? 8?
Maybe.
Oh, yeah, to the guy that's about the HG101 Ease article, I'm eventually going to get together to do a Falcom book because I love Falcom.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Corey would be first in line for that.
Yeah.
There's because a lot of it has to do with just fleshing out some of the other other series, which I've been doing the past couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, the older JRPG series. And the one that I was always missing was this one game called Lord Monarch. Which is very unusual, because it's a real-time strategy game. But, yeah.
So, when did you start the site?
2003-ish?
Wow.
It was, like, right after I had graduated from college, and I moved back to my parents' house. And I was like... I was working retail at Borders. I'm like, this is terrible. I need something to make my life less awful. So,
so wow. So a long time, though. I mean.
Yeah. As I had sort of, like, snuck it underneath that. Because at the time, the Castlevania Dungeon was hosted. I sort of snuck it under a subdirectory there. And it's come a long way since then.
For sure. Yeah.
Is it crazy to think that you've been doing it for 14 years?
I guess so. I mean, I started the Castlevania Dungeon in 97, so that would be more than half my life at this point. But yeah, Lord Monarch was on the Super Famicom, but that's kind of the weakest port of the game, I think. The thing about Lord Monarch, though, is that they're different, like, skins. Like, the default skin is, like, a standard medieval type characters. But you can change it to, like, what do you call it? Sengoku, Japanese era. Or, like, they think there's fairies. You can change it to, like, a fast food world. It's very strange.
This overhead level is a little bit easier than the other ones, it feels like. Okay.
I've tried to do research and never... fully came up with an understanding of what the historical origins is of, you know, the Ebisu Maru style thief mask, and you see other characters like this in here, and I've seen it in things beyond just Goemon, where you've got that weird mask that, like, goes under the nose. Like, where does that come from?
I'm not sure either. I just think it was a thief. Stereotypical thief thing, but I wonder where it originated from too.
It's just it's a very particular style of mask. It's just so weird. I think wasn't I've never played it, and I heard it was really awful, but there was a Wario game on the DS, I think, and I want to say that he might wear a mask like that.
Oh, yeah, Kaito, or the Wario made in Master Disguise or something like that.
Yeah. My memory of artwork of that game is he wears a mask like that in one of his disguises and that. I've never played that. I that's one of those games that I would like to try sometime, because it's just like, could it really be as bad as people say it is? I don't know.
How bad could it be?
That's
one of our favorite
Someone
things.
Someone in chat says it's a bandit mask from the Edo period, which would definitely make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to see, like, some historical artwork from that period, like
see
just to get
like
an idea.
A real person.
Yeah, like I can't. The other another thing that I've struggle to research that much is, you know, this game has those floating umbrellas with one eyeball on it. Kirby has that too. And I think I found out like the category of creature that falls under, but it still didn't clarify for me what was the deal with this very specific thing of an umbrella with an eyeball.
Oh yeah, that's a type of yokai. They're in these in the first level of this game. You fight those little enemies. Yeah. It's just like a demon.
I mean, it's such a very specific thing. Like I know it's like a type of yokai, but like
where did it come from?
I just want to know more about it, because anytime I see something so weirdly specific that appears in you know, more than one game series, it's like, okay, this is a thing, I guess.
The Kasobake.
Kasobake? That's the
Kasa means umbrella, and obake means demon. Or monster, I should say.
Someone in the chat say, doesn't Pocky and Rocky have one-eyed umbrellas? I can't remember.
Yeah, they do too. Yeah, yokai. Oh, well, that's a Wikipedia article about it. But yeah, somebody asks if I could speak Japanese. Terribly. I can't speak it much at all. I only really know video game Japanese, which is like...
That's all you need
well
to
enough
know, really.
To like... get through menus and like parse stuff dialogue to figure, oh, where do I need to go? I need to do this. Mm-hmm. A lot of other stuff is just like research that I do through the help of Google Translate. Like, I know enough of it, so if I stick something in Google Translate, like, sort of figure out what is correct and what needs a little bit more research. Because the vocabulary often isn't correct, especially when it comes to like foreign names, anything in katakana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine video game terms don't translate super well.
No. Although some people like Google Translate, it suggests different things, but sometimes it doesn't work in its favor. Like if you put in the katakana for Famicom, it'll translate it to NES, which is really annoying because it's not actually what it says. Yeah. But I mean, it like changes. So
I get why they think that was clever, but no, that's confusing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it still does that. I know it used to.
I mean, granted, it would, to us, it sounds confusing, but to the average person, like, they would be like, what's a Famicom? You know, you need to explain it all to the Japanese NES.
Oh, yeah. I haven't updated the Castlevania dungeon in a long time. I should at least update it with the fact that they put a book out, but I just don't have time to go back and, fix it up. I'm pretty much stacked nowadays, keeping Hardcore Gaming 101 updated.
You just released another Sega Arcade Classics book, didn't you?
Yep, that was at the end of December, along with the Shoot 'em Up book on the same day.
Oh, wow.
The reason I suggested this is because I'm doing another Konami book, which is going to feature the Goemon article, along with the Contra article that I've been working on and off for like 5 years.
Mm.
Didn't you when you did the Castlevania book, didn't you have an issue with Konami, like, kind of restricting you from selling it for a minute?
Well, I had it out for like a month or so, and then I got an email from somebody in their licensing department that was like, this book is unlicensed, removed from sale immediately. So I took it off and I explained to them, like, look, this is totally legitimate. Like, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm familiar enough with like fair use and what it means. Mm-hmm. And how it's used. And I was like, this is totally legit. It's not infringing on anything. You know, I sent them copies of the PDFs. I was like, if you want to discuss how we can make this legitimate, I'd be happy to. The guy never responded to me. I even called him up a bunch of times, left a bunch of messages. And after about a month of just like being annoyed and demoralized at this thing I had worked on for such a long time, I had to take off sale. I put a little sticker on it that said unofficial, not authorized. I changed the description a little bit that said it was unofficial, not authorized, and just put it back for sale. and then they never contacted me again. Like, there is a lot of like sketchy stuff, especially on the Kindle. Like, if you go on there, there's like weird Super Mario fan fiction and all sorts of stuff that is like definitely infringing. Like, there's a lot of that sort of stuff on the Amazon Marketplace. So maybe he saw that and thought that it was a case like that.
So you said you put a sticker on it? where you put it.
Yeah, like the original run of the books didn't have the unofficial and unauthorized thing on the cover.
So is do you think it's worth more money?
probably not. I mean, it's a bragging right, I guess. I don't even have a correct one of it.
But I remember when that happened. Because I bought the Sega Arcade Classics was your first one, and then that was the second one. Really
and
good
that,
book.
That took a long time to put together.
Sometimes I just have to wonder, like, what it's like to be an employee of Konami and, like, know that, like, your job is to do nothing but, like, just bully how people use their content, and they aren't even using their own intellectual property. They're just protecting it, I guess, if you want to say protect, but they're just not letting anyone do anything with it, but they aren't doing anything with it themselves. It's just so
it's definitely
weird.
Very puzzling. Like I know if the way that they at the time the work their email addresses was weird. Like, you know how you normally work for a company, you get an email address that's just like your name at company.com.
Yeah.
Well, like they have like a weird generated hash or something like that. It would like change every couple months. And I don't know why that they would do something like that.
What is up with it? Like it must be the absolute most miserable place to work. It really has to be.
That's what I've kind of heard.
I mean, I just...
Everyone's just depressed now.
Yeah. Like, it's really, really bizarre. Like, there's just no reason that what happened, you know?
I think it may not have been an edict. It was just, like, this guy saw it and then, you know, just like, gave up.
This is a really
which
cool
which is good, because... Yeah, this is where they show off the something neat.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this... Like, everything up to this point has been, like, pretty normal. And then all of a sudden they, like, put this, like, really, like, cool twist on it that's, like, you know, something that I, you know, I feel kind of, you know, taps into, like, it's more of like a 16-bit level, you know?
Right.
Like, this isn't really something you would have likely seen on the NES. I mean, you know, Konami did pull off some cool stuff on the NES, but not quite like this.
Yeah, this is the Mystical Ninja's equivalent of the... this is the Clockwork Mansion from Castlevania 4.
Oh, yeah.
There's even a similar, like... Back in Castlevania 4, like, the fact that you could walk back and forth between the grates...
On
the fences.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing. Shinobi did something similar, too.
Oh, yep. Yep, and was it Shadow Dancer? No, you're talking about Revenge of Shinobi. Like at the...
Yeah.
At the... with the... in the junkyard.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought it was just Shadow Dancer that did something like that.
I mean, I still think, you know, Wario Land on Virtual Boy is cool with going into the background.
Yeah.
This level's quite a bit longer.
Yeah, this one's kind of tough.
Yeah, a lot of the levels in Goemon's Great Adventure are kind of like the last level in each world is kind of like a longer sort of palace type thing, and they get brutal. And like really long too.
I'm so afraid that... Did I just like start over? Start the level over? Or is it just is repeating?
Oh, I think it's a different door you have to go through, I think.
Okay. So I must have gone the wrong direction.
Because, yeah, like you go through the once and then you go through this section that's upside down. Yeah, I didn't know that you could do that. Like, you just get chucked back to the beginning of the level.
I like how he kind of squints his eyes and is really focused when he crawls. Okay, so we're going to do this again with the spinning. I was just kind of lost. So Kurt, you do a live stream as well for Hardcore Gaming. That's the like the 47th top or the top 47,000 games or whatever.
Yeah, that's the crew that take care of the live streaming stuff.
I see. So what is the significance of that name? Is just like, is that how many games there actually are in the world? Or is that just like a guess? No,
it's just an arbitrary number.
So I guess I don't go through this door, right?
Maybe you go to the left?
Yeah, try to go to the left.
Ah!
You should be able to jump on those platforms over there.
Right, that's what I'm thinking I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Except for I know. What? What? Come on. How did I do it so right? And only to mess it up. Whoops. So how many people do you actually have like writing for the site now? Like there's
a handful of regulars. And then a lot of it's just anybody that wants to write something that'll contribute something.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize that you took like contributions like that.
Oh yeah. I get a lot of interesting stuff I've never heard of before too.
Man, come on. And you do a bit on a YouTube channel as well. Like you had like some interviews and some like Japanese developer tours and stuff like that, or like arcade tours and stuff.
There's a guy that used to write for the site. He did a Kickstarter for the Untold History of Japanese Game Developers.
A friend of mine was just talking about that book and saying about it. It's just absolutely amazing.
He's working on the third volume, which is going to be out sometime. But when he went there, he brought a camera with him and just took some various footage. And originally, as a backer bonus, he gave out DVDs. But then after those had been distributed, everybody was asking him, like, are you going to make any more? And it's just too much of a pain to do. So he just let me upload them all on the YouTube channel. So they're available for free for everybody.
That's cool. That's really, really cool. Yeah, my friend Joey was just telling me about that book and just talking about how it's just got so many crazy stories in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of neat stories in this background. I mean, a lot of it is really obscure stuff too. Like, I didn't mean to just go back and try to cover some of the like the companies that I had never heard of before.
I'm just jumping through this real quick. I hope this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Or I'm just getting really lucky.
I think you're almost at the end.
There we go. I got all my power back at least.
There you go. Yeah, this is another boss that's like a Castlevania 4 boss.
What do I gotta do?
I can't remember. Try hitting the ball? Oh no.
Is it the face in the middle?
No, it's just their head. Come on. Did I do it? He's charged. I thought he was going to charge at me and I have to jump over him. But no more hits left. Oh, come on.
Yeah, see? And then every time you hit it, it just gets bigger and bigger.
Does it really?
Yep. Like scaling. Look at what we could do.
Yep. I'm just going to throw my money at it. it makes it a lot easier. I got enough money.
Yeah.
Yeah, use it.
Come on.
Oh, he's doing some tricky stuff now.
Yeah. Come on. I'm kind of safe in the corner here. At least until...
That's what you think.
Yeah, he's almost dead.
Oh, I think I got really, really lucky there.
Oh, yeah, see, there's Yai.
I'm Ninja Woman.
I am Ninja Woman Yai.
Okay, so she's like a character in following you.
She's like starting two games after this one, she became like a staple playable character, but she has green hair like from then on.
Yeah.
Did they ever explain in the story why she has green hair?
I think she has green hair starting in Goemon 2, I think, actually. The Super Famicom 2. Maybe? Yeah. I think so, too. She's not, like, the next, the characters, like, Ebisumaru basically has always looked like himself, but Goemon's, like, style changed a bit. Like, the game after this, the second game on Super Famicom, is kind of what established the look of all of the characters that stayed pretty much with the series from then on. I mean, there were some minor things, at some point in the PlayStation generation, like, Yai started wearing, like, a skirt instead of pants. And then, there's also the super anime spinoff on PlayStation and GBA,
which is a bad idea.
It's such a bad idea in a way, but like I feel like in retrospect, it's just such like an oddball thing to look back on. This is like I'm kind of excited to play it. Like I said, I have all of the PlayStation ones, so I just like it. It's so weird looking, but like I'm looking forward to playing it because it's just it seems like a straightforward platformer, which seems like fun to me.
Yeah, it's not an awful game. It's just like such a weird reinvention, which kind of makes sense. I mean, they had made so many different games.
Yeah,
using like a specific style, that to change it up isn't a bad idea, but. Just the way that they changed it up was,
yeah. And then the other just sort of straightforward platformer, kind of just like pre-rendered graphics, but it plays the feel of the controls and everything is like very similar to 2 on Super Famicom. Which I think that might be the PlayStation one I'm looking forward to playing the most. Like, it seems pretty basic, but it just seems fun.
Yeah. The third Super Famicom, third PlayStation game is sort of like that, but it's kind of lazy because all the music was taken straight from
Great Adventure, right?
Yeah. The thing is, though, and I haven't updated the site article because I read about it more recently, is that it's kind of a collection of bosses from previous Goemon games.
Okay.
So later in the game, you get to fight like General McGinnis from the second Super Famicom game. Okay. And whatever the guy was in the fourth one, Harakiri Seppuku Maru, I think his name was.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like they were intentionally going with like this rehash theme.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The villain, like the king of recycling or something like that.
Yeah, it starts off with like, you know, they're going to recycle some stuff. So it's kind of tongue-in-cheek in that respect.
Yeah, like, I wonder, like, if, like, the developers were, like, kind of under bad circumstances when that game was made. Like maybe they didn't give them enough, like, budget or time or something. And so they're just like, well, okay, we're just going to make this whole game a joke about recycling.
It might be. I mean, it uses the same engine as the fourth one, the stupid cartoon one. Like, it's the same sort of thing, and it does kind of feel slapped together. Like, Konami had a tendency to do that, like Harmony and Dissonance for the Game Boy Advance. I always felt like kind of it was the team learning how to program for the system. Like Era of Sorrow was like the actual one that they wanted to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think like Circle of the Moon was great, but I think they realized that they like kind of need to rethink how to build Castlevania on the Game Boy. Like for one, it was really criticized of being too dark. You know, Circle of the Moon was, and so
it went with a very different. I mean, that's what it comes down to. But they definitely did.
They're way overcompensated for it with Harmony of Dissonance. And it's like, you know, I really like Harmony of Dissonance, but Aria of Sorrow is definitely like the main event. But I like the idea of the overlapping castles. Like, I felt like that was a fun gimmick. Also, you're doing like exactly what I did. I remember grinding on these things for so long.
Somebody asked if there's an anime. There is. There's like two animes. There's some sort of OVA, which I've never seen, but somebody else wrote about for the site. And then there was also a TV series that actually was brought out in America.
Really?
And you might still be able to get the DVDs of them. I think ADV Films did them. I don't remember being particularly great, but it's just a novelty behind it.
Yeah, there's, you know, I discovered some Goemon soundtracks on Amazon Japan not long ago. I'm like, ooh, which games are these from? And like one or two of them was like the soundtrack to the pachinko game.
Oh man, like I used to in New York City, there's a book off, and when I was in college, like 15 years ago, I would go there like every couple weeks, and they used to be like a treasure haven for video game soundtracks, and they were all really cheap. Mm-hmm. Like so at the time, I got the soundtrack to Nintendo 64 game for about $7.
I've got that one.
And then I looked around later, like about 5 years ago or so, and it's like was going for several hundred dollars. I'm like, it's just irresponsible for me to keep this.
Really? That one is worth that much?
The Goemon soundtrack CDs are really expensive on the Japanese market.
You're
he's going to get it.
I just want to see if this is the one.
If it is the one, are you willing to part for
that's
it?
That's the one.
That this one?
If you could find it, yeah, you could probably. I sold it for about $300 a few years ago.
You have got to be kidding me!
I'm not kidding.
It's awesome when that happens.
I don't want to sell it, but like it's got like this artwork.
But you're not opposed to selling it.
Yep.
It's got like this artwork of like they've got like a CG going on like hiding inside crowds and stuff.
Let me see. I'll dig up a link to like Amazon Japan. Sort of gives you an idea about how pricey these are.
Really? I can't believe it. Now I don't have like I didn't save until more recently the what you call it, the spine card thing.
That will be strong.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't really have any interest in those, but
see, okay, that one, the cheapest copy is 125,895 yen.
Wow.
Which translates to what in US
dollars? Well, if I'm thinking correctly, like $1,000?
What?
Like,
no, wait. Come on. If it's $1,000, there's no way that Try is not selling that.
Yeah, like, I mean, I remember even when I was.
If it was $1,000, like, no Try, and you hang on to it.
It takes some thinking, but it would, like you said, it would. Now that kind of reaches the point of like, it's irresponsible for me to keep this.
Let me double check. Like, obviously, trying to find a buyer for that amount of money is you would never find it.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, I just happened upon a collector in Australia, and I gave it to him. Yeah, it's about a little over $1,000.
What this? You've yeah. got to be kidding me.
I'm not kidding. Here, let me, where should I paste this link for you?
Just paste it in Skype chat. I mean, it's a good, it's a good shape. There's no
yeah,
scratches
I bought that,
on the case.
I bought that for like $7 back in the early 2000s and then sold it again. Let's see what the other ones are here. The one for the Super Nintendo game is $29,000. It's about $300. I remember the one for Goemon's Great Adventure, wherever it is, that one was really expensive also. Like both those N64 games.
I think they just released a
well, that one doesn't even have any listings.
I think didn't they just release like a new like Goemon compilation? Like a multi-disc compilation or something, but I couldn't figure out how to order it because I don't think it was on Amazon Japan. It was on some other site, and I couldn't tell if I was like able to like order for shipping to America or not.
Is that like Project Egg? Maybe they do a lot of old soundtrack re-releases.
So 125,895 yen.
Some people are saying it's like only 130 bucks.
No, I mean, that translates to 1,129 US dollars.
Dude,
yeah,
you sell it and get your Rondo. with that that you've been wanting. And whatever super high price game or system or whatever.
Yeah,
or put
I
it
mean,
towards
that
your
would...
TV. The 4K TV you want. Can I make this jump?
That just seems too surreal. How could that be worth that much money?
The collector's market for CDs, like, most CDs aren't worth nearly that amount of money. But for some reason, like, there must be, like, they must have got a really low print run, and the amount of Mystical Ninja Japanese fans are extremely loaded, so...
That is bizarre.
I mean, we could get a better idea about how much they actually sell for, like on.
You should
do
it.
Any auctions
and buy
Yahoo.
Me Snatcher. And you still have half of it left over.
You know what I really wish that I'd gotten while I could was the Kirby's Return to Dreamland soundtrack. That kills me that I didn't. I didn't know that that was available via Club Nintendo Japan. And so now I'm like obsessed with like making sure I get like every Kirby soundtrack that comes out in Japan. Cause they, you know, Nintendo went through this phase where they really weren't releasing CDs anymore. And now they're kind of back into it. Like there was a Planet Robobot soundtrack, and then they didn't make a, as far as I know, they never made like a Twilight Princess soundtrack, but then they made a Twilight Princess HD soundtrack. It's like three discs.
Those are another, those old Nintendo soundtracks that they put out in the mid-90s are also really expensive.
Oh, yeah?
I used to have Star Fox 64, but I sold it way back
when.
Oh, now that's...
Is that just the one that was included as, it's like in a sleeve?
No, this one was a full Japanese release.
I see.
Yeah. A friend of mine got that the full soundtrack, and I've got this bootleg that, you know, back when it was like, whoa, I know this guy that's got a CD burning machine. That was, you know, that was like a big deal back then, and his friend burned me a bootleg of his Star Fox soundtrack. But the real Star Fox soundtrack I have is just like the sampler. That you could get at like EB or whatever.
Yeah, I still have that one. And I ended up picking up the Star Fox 3D soundtrack, the Club Nintendo one, because it's slightly better quality.
Actually, probably my biggest soundtrack
regret. This
guy regret...
is in the later games too, isn't he?
Yeah, this is Sasuke.
Yep.
Or it might just be a generic version of him, but yeah. He's just kind of unnamed at this point. But I think maybe my number one greatest soundtrack regret is that I never got the Donkey Kong Country Trilogy CD that you could get from Nintendo Power.
Oh, those are worth so much money now.
I know. I don't know how much they're worth, but I know it's out of my price range, but I really want them.
Yeah, a couple years ago on a whim, I just set my eBay alerts for Donkey Kong Country 2 soundtrack, and every time it's like $300. Nope, not going to that.
Yeah,
the trilogy
I've got...
should be even more.
I mean, I've got the CD for Donkey Kong Country 3, which, I mean, is a fine soundtrack and all, but pales in comparison to 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Can you see how long this game is? I'm doing pretty good, I feel like.
I have the game facts open. Let's see how many stages are. There's a bunch.
I mean, I'm almost... This is 6 that I'm going to now.
Nine levels.
Oh, that's not too bad. I'm not gonna beat it tonight, obviously, but I mean, I think that I could come back to it and beat it maybe soon.
6 Tengu. Yeah, this is the level I gave up on last time I played it. This is also the only level where you need to get a pass before they let you to the side scrolling section.
I'll keep that in mind. I need to build up some money again. If you just really like. Load up on... Is that the pass right there? Yeah, it's right there. $980.
Yeah, you gotta grind up for it.
Well, Luckily, the enemies aren't too hard. Try $1,000. I'm in complete amazement right now.
Yeah. Well, I'll post it on the YouTube chat with the link to the Yahoo auction that was also.
Well, try. I'll have to do it because it doesn't. Like, it's set to only mods.
Wait, did you drop the chat there, or drop the link in the Skype?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same price.
Was it what actually sold for?
No, it's still listed. I don't know how to check completed auctions.
Oh, that one's got scratch on. Mine don't have a scratch.
Yeah.
The $1,000 one does?
It's like 130,000 yen.
Let's see if I could paste it into the chat. Oh, no.
Yeah, I'll
remove any web addresses a dragon. Oh,
I can paste it.
There you go.
I have a crown next to my name. I'm the king. Yahoo Auctions, is that like, that's like bigger than eBay in Japan, right?
Yeah, they just were the ones that they got to the market first.
That is insane. I mean, it's a phenomenal soundtrack. I mean, just unbelievably good soundtrack. But the thing that's disappointing about it is that I want to say the tracks loop, they only play through once.
Oh, yeah, because it's only one CD and it's a lot
like,
of music.
It's like 44 tracks or something.
I wonder if there's a way to check for.
Check for sold listings.
There is like a historical. There's a site called Auk-Fan, which does historical listings. I wonder if that has it.
Did you check American eBay?
Oh, I'm not even gonna bother. I mean, granted.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even bringing anything up.
It's such an obscure release that you would never be able to
see. I never even thought it was that obscure. I was just looking, yep. You know, I mean, like, that was around the time that I was getting into importing CDs, and I was just like, man, that game has fantastic music, and there it is. I'm going to buy that.
It's not like an ever anime version or anything, is it?
No, I mean, it looks exactly like the release.
Can you look up to see how much the, because the one I have that's probably worth money is my Eternal Arcadia soundtrack.
It's the
official one. I think I paid $120 for it when it came out. Like it was like that price to import. Like,
oh yeah, here's an auction that finished off for 126,000 yen. I'll paste that too.
Wait, for
126 for which one?
For the Nintendo 64 one.
Okay.
Oh, for Goemon.
I got excited Eternal Arcadia.
No, Eternal Arcadia isn't. I'll check up that in a second. Let me paste that in the Skype, and then you can do what you will.
Try it. I can't. You got to do it.
Well, you know.
But I mean, it's difficult for overseas sellers. Like you'd need to find like a middle person.
Yeah.
Because they're not as Japanese marketplace tend to be very close. They're not very foreign friendly.
This one is sold at 126,000 yen.
Yep. That one had 13 bids.
Now, but do we have proof that he was actually paid?
That's a good question. He only had one thing. What do you? Who knows?
I never would have dreamed. That
I mean,
that
it's just
was...
a CD. I mean,
it's one.
I had
CD.
I sold a record and like shipping a record was difficult. Because it's so much bigger and there's so many things you gotta consider, but I mean, for a CD, that's nothing.
Yeah,
that's easy to ship. I gotta find some food here.
I really can't believe it's worth that kind of money. But you know, I've wanted for a while to do an episode about soundtracks. Like I just, because you know, I would guess that not that many people are actually insane enough that they like to own real CDs anymore.
I still am. Okay, Eternals, Arcadia, even though it never got like a regular commercial release, I think it was only like a limited through Sega. It's about 10,000 yen, which is a little under 100 bucks.
So it's actually less expensive now than when I bought it. It's worth less. Dang.
Maybe. I remember, I think I paid a lot for because I need to go through a middle person. Like, we didn't stock it at CD Japan or any place that normally would had sold it.
But, you know, I kind of want to do an episode sometime that's just looking at CD soundtrack sets. You know, because there's a lot of artwork and stuff in it that you don't see anywhere else, you know? So it might just be a fun thing to look through sometime. So I definitely would not sell it before then, but, you know, like you say, like, selling to Japan, that could be a little tricky.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. Corey, don't you have, or isn't this worth some money, or didn't you used to have the Kefka's Domain version of the Final Fantasy VI soundtrack?
Yeah, and I have the Secret of Mana one as well. The US through Squaresoft.
Oh, okay. I've got a what I'm pretty sure is an authentic Secret of Mana it was relatively recent, but I'm pretty sure it was an official Square Enix printing. I've got a few bootlegs. Like, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into, you know, at the time.
Oh yeah, that's the same with everybody. This cursed ever enemies.
Yeah.
It's on May, right?
Like off the top of my head, like, you know, my Final Fantasy 7 and 8 are not authentic. Soul Calibur 2 and Suikoden 3, I'm pretty sure, are not authentic. And my Skies of Arcadia, I'm pretty sure, is not.
Yeah, I don't think your Skies is, because we talked about it.
I wish I could remember where I bought those. But, I mean, all that was like back in college when I got most of those, so.
Yeah, the for a while, like, the vendors at anime conventions, they didn't really care if they sold legitimate or not. So you need to be aware. And unfortunately, like, legitimate CD releases were usually, like, $30, and then the ever new ones would be, like, $10. So, of course, they gave an incentive for everybody to sell and buy the $10 CDs.
Yeah.
But eventually places outlawed that sort of stuff, which was definitely good.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm afraid of, like, I'm so close to dying. And I'm trying to keep myself alive so that I don't have to do it all again. Because I'm sure
the past doesn't carry over, does it?
Sorry.
If you die?
Or if you, you have to get continue.
I think you lose it. Yeah, now you know why I quit in this level when I died. I did the boss. No, the last CD, have you ever played the game Gata Protectors for the 3DS?
Mm-mm.
It's like a sequel to an XB LIG game called Protect Me Knight. And it's kind of like this tower defense game that's done like an 8-bit game. But it was done by Ancient, which is like Yuzo Koshiro's mom's company.
I didn't realize they're still doing stuff.
Yeah, and but like the soundtrack to the game, like the music itself is pretty good, but there's a DLC pack you can get which they kind of change the music to like in the style of different arcade games, because it's the music is done by different famous video game music composers. So other than Yuzo Koshiro, there's Shinji Hosoe and what's the guy, OGR from Zuntata. And even one of the Konami guys, I'm blanking on his name, but he did a lot of stuff. But so it turns the music into something that sounds just like out of Gradius 2 or something that's just out of like Darius. It sounds really cool. So I bought the CD just for that.
So was Yuzo Koshiro's mom like in the game business, like when he got into the game business, or is that something she did more
I
recently?
I think so. I need to double check that, because I know like his whole family is involved in it.
Really? I had no idea. That's so interesting.
Yeah, like his sister does stuff.
That's so interesting. He was at MAGFest. I think it was the first year that we went.
Yep.
Yeah, that was the year I went. I think it's when I met Corey.
Yeah, in the arcade. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, we've known each other like a little while, actually, when you think about it. Even though, you know, like,
yeah,
we don't talk that often, but we ran into each other like at MAGFest and Too Many Games.
And that was before we started the show.
Yeah.
Okay,
before we had Frame Meisters.
According to Wikipedia, Ancient was founded in 1990. Company is founded by his mother, Tomo Koshiro, while his sister, Ayano Koshiro, also works at the company as a character and graphic designer.
Interesting.
But yeah, he's been part of the
I had no idea games. The Koshiro family was, like, completely into games. That's so cool.
But, like, he'd been doing... Like, he got his start with the game, the Falcom game Xanadu. Like, he just took some of his music, and then he sent it to Falcom, and they're like, we want to use your music in a game. So, on the Xanadu expansion disc, they just took his music, and there he was consistently employed with Falcom for various stuff. And then he got around to Sega and all sorts of those other places.
I learned last week that apparently he did the soundtrack for the Master System version of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yep.
Well, that's because it was designed. The game was programmed by Ancient.
Oh, okay.
That's like the best thing about that version, I think, too.
They had the Zone 1 music or whatever, but then like all the, you know,
then it becomes its own game after that.
Then the music is pretty good.
Yeah.
Has its own flavor.
That game is really expensive.
Really?
Yeah.
Like all versions in all regions, or?
No, the European one isn't. But the Master System, the US version. Okay, this is a weird story, and I think I get this right. It's exactly the same as the European release, but there's a special sticker above the UPC code. That sticker is like the difference between a $5 game and a $1,000 game. Because it's just like solely for collectors. Because I have the European one, like it's exactly the same,
and it runs in 60 just, hertz, you know, if you play it on US system, right?
Yeah, almost all Master System games were made for 60 hertz. Like even like some of the ones that were Euro specific, they were programmed in mind for 50 hertz, so they'll run a little bit fast if you play them on an American system,
like Ninja Gaiden, right?
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden and Power Strike. They're a little bit too fast. But they're still playable. But since Sonic the Hedgehog, a lot of those were direct conversions of Game Gear games, they didn't like bother to reprogram them to run at the correct frequency.
Man, I have one more hit left. Oh, there's armor right there. That's what I want. How much is armor? 200. Just gotta...
Man, I wonder if I could have any other like valuable soundtrack.
Now you're like,
what about like the earlier prints of like, you know, Mario RPG and Chrono Trigger and stuff like that. I mean, I've got those.
Oh, those aren't like anything by Square except
those had to have had like a bunch of prints. So
yeah.
The only thing that was the soundtrack to Live Alive, for whatever reason, became really rare for a while, but it got so rare that eventually they did a reprint.
That's interesting. Wasn't that the first soundtrack that Yoko Shimomura did for Square?
I don't know if it was the first, but it's definitely one of them.
If you choose from logbook entry, do you have to put in the password every time?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't want to do that.
Oh, wait, is that true? Wait.
I don't know.
Oh.
I gotta do it again.
Oh no.
This sucks.
Oh.
I thought you need to put the password in.
I would keep it.
Yeah, maybe I was mistaken about that, because I remember having to re-input passwords.
Should I see? I mean, might as well kill
myself. Yeah, maybe next time if you die.
Yeah, I'm just gonna kill myself off and see if it happens. I mean, it's almost 11 o'clock anyways.
So yeah,
I'm not beating the game tonight, so.
No.
Man, this stream went really quick.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh. Yeah, look at that. Oh, but you still I start with no lives. You start with the same amount of lives.
Ah, that's the cruel kind of password. The password that remembers too much.
Yeah. Didn't Bloodlines does that, right?
Yeah, Castlevania Bloodlines.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? Whatever. It saves some time.
Oh yeah, and you still have Yeah, okay.
I can get all my health back. That's what I didn't do when I had all that pizza. Let's see. Troy, is that you?
What?
Is that you drinking?
I was just having some water.
I feel like the microphone is like inside your throat. When is it happening? it's so audible. Let's see. I just want to get my health back. Now that I have enough money to buy the pass again. I mean, that saves me time. I just gotta. Maybe I can save some more money and get some armor. So it only saves your diary if you hit yes for that, I guess.
Yeah, I guess if it gives you a password, it sort of makes a snapshot.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I think I have to fix that.
Yeah, I mean, that's makes it a little bit more convenient.
Yeah.
You just kind of hang out by the door. You know. Farm enough money to get enough lives. Just max out your lives, maybe.
I'm fascinated by the chat's reaction to me drinking water. Should I drink some more water? I don't understand what how that sounds so well. I mean, I'm just drinking water out of a regular bottle.
There it is.
Why is that so audible?
I don't know. It's like we're right up in there.
It must be the way that you've got the sound balance, because I usually have some water next to me every stream.
I don't know.
There's somebody that says, go to that guy when your timer's last digit is a 5. Which guy, though?
What guy?
Mm-hmm.
The diary guy? I don't know.
What does it do?
I don't know. Something fun.
Let's find out. I'm okay with that. The timer moves slow enough that you could do it too. Is it the diary person? Because I think it's a woman.
I don't know. It's just so maybe somebody in the chat can arrive at the 5 guy.
Yeah, who do I go to? Arrive at 5 guy. Who?
Was there an NPC that actually said something like that?
No, somebody in the chat.
Oh, is there somebody? Okay, maybe there is a person that is.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get my diary entry.
So there's next to the travel agent, he says, "Why don't you keep a diary of your travels?"
Okay. Here we go. Here we go.
You did it.
When did you arrive? At 5? Ha ha ha. That was a good one. Is that it? Or is it the first digit? No, it's the last digit.
An NPC asked, when did you arrive at 5? Oh, that, yeah. I thought that was a dumb pun. That just didn't get translated.
Oh, so it's just a joke.
Oh. You didn't get anything. You're all hyped up. You're going to get like, you know,
two lives. I was hoping for.
Did you get anything fun, or is it just trolling you?
No, it's nothing. It's just a joke.
Oh,
what a joke!
I'm sure that was much funnier in Japanese.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a ton of money now, at least. I'm gonna buy that armor. Can I, like, stock up the armor? Can I buy multiple pieces of armor?
Yeah, it stacks up. I mean, there's an upper limit, but you can definitely buy several armors. And several shoes and stuff, too. Like, I don't know, have you gotten the shoes yet? Because I always buy a ton.
A pair of shoes, yes.
Oh, you can buy more, and you just walk around in these areas much faster.
Right.
Lone Star on the chat is saying that GameTech.us has a sale on Ultra HDMI for N64.
Yep, they're going to be... He's taking pre-orders for it, I think.
Oh, man.
A lot of people are asking about it.
I would jump on it, but it's like my favorite mod. I can't recommend it enough, but I also acknowledge it's probably not for everyone either.
No.
But I really like it.
As evidenced by the 500 plus dislikes on the N64 anti-aliasing hack video. It blows my mind. Come on.
Yeah, but I think, you know, people are also like confused by like what we're positing in that video. Like I'm saying D-Boyer is good. I acknowledge not everyone's going to agree with that. I think D-Boyer is good, but anti-aliasing removal, no, I don't really think that's good, but it's interesting. It was something that we had to talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Apparently he's got 150 left, which actually kind of sounds like a lot for something kind of obscure like a mod.
Yeah.
You know, or I don't know if obscure, niche, maybe. But yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, with the N64 episode, there was actually the N64 hack episode. It's actually interesting. The N64 hack episode, like, kind of came back. Like, because the VHS tapes episode did so well that I think that since like that was the other video that YouTube kind of like naturally spiked through the algorithms, I think for some reason that one kind of had a resurgence because of VHS's popularity. And
that's so interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But there was a recent comment on that video that was like, it said like, why do I have a feeling they're making it look blurrier than it really was?
Which is like,
and then I'm like, well, actually, considering we were comparing RGB to HDMI to HDMI with anti-aliasing removed, that RGB is less blurry technically than you could actually get out of an unmodified N64. So it was actually less blurry than it really was.
Oh, well. I mean, what did somebody say about us the other day? Said that that we just copy all the info from RetroRGB.com, and it's like their 60-year-old father trying to explain video quality but using nothing but Google.
Yeah, well, I didn't even see that comment because I saw you post that in a Skype chat, but I never saw that. Did they delete it? I couldn't see that comment. I couldn't find it.
All right, where am I going here? Where am I taking the pass now that I have the pass?
I can't remember.
Where haven't you been?
I think I could beat this game. Not tonight, but like this week, I think I can beat it.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, I think this is something I maybe have talked to you about before. But I think that we have at least adults tend to have this idea that they were like so much better at games when they were kids and they're not good at games anymore. But, you know, like as time has gone on, like since starting the channel, I feel like I'm so much better at games than I was, like even as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think I'm like great at games now, but I'm persistent. You know, I, you know, if you bang your head against it for long enough, you'll beat it.
Yeah.
But I kind of, you know, got out of NES for a while, and then, you know, sometime in like, you know, late 90s, I was like, hey, you know what? There's a lot of good stuff on NES I missed. And so then I like got back into NES, but I was actually kind of afraid of most of the games that I bought. And even though I thought they were really cool, I didn't beat all that many of them. Like I beat like, you know, the Mega Man games and stuff. But, you know, a lot of the games that were new to me, I didn't beat until, you know, the past... Since after finishing college, to be honest, you know, in the past 10, 11 years has been when I beat a good chunk of my NES games. And it's just because I think I learned to be more persistent rather than got better. But in some ways, I guess I got better. But I don't know. I mean, I definitely do not consider myself good at games. Mm-hmm. I think I used to, though, when I was a kid, though, because I didn't know that many people who played games, so I was better than almost all of them at games, except for my few friends who were really into games.
Oh, this one scrolls the other way.
There you go.
This one, I think, gets a little tricky.
We'll see how it goes.
I remember, though, like, when I first got the Super Nintendo, like, I didn't play a lot of games with save features back in the NES days. And so I remember always being a little disappointed when I started playing the Super Nintendo. I'm like, man, I'm beating my games in, like, a week. Like, you know, it used to take me so much longer. And, of course, nowadays, like, if I'm popping in, like, just a random platformer, I'm like... If I don't beat this tonight, then it's going to take too long. You know, it's kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier in the chat, like, what was it you were saying about, you know, gaining this mindset of something?
This isn't the boss at level already, I'm sure, right?
Oh, no.
I don't think so. This is like a mid-boss.
Okay. Just spam my money. I feel like that's the way to do like some of this stuff.
Yeah, it really is much easier.
But I think there was like an expectation back in the day where it's like, well, this game's gonna take me a really long time to beat anyway. But then it's like now like you pop in an old game and you're like, this is gonna be pretty short, right?
Yeah.
And you know, and you don't really take the time to get to know it as well as you used to, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, back then, like, if you beat a game, like, in a rental, then there's no point in buying it.
Right. That was how Goemon on N64 was for me. I was, like, one of the few games that, like, I rented and I beat it. But then I liked it so much that, like, eventually I did buy it. But that was honestly one of the reasons I stopped renting games, because I kept beating all these games that I was like, man, I really liked that, but now it feels like a waste of money.
Yeah. You guys see that? Watch it on the stream. It's like, I go to the next screen, there's an enemy right there. Like, it attacks me, like, the second that the screen pops up. I'm done. But yeah, I will get the logbook entry so that I can come back again.
Oh, do you still have the pass?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I can go right back to it, but I'm gonna get my.
So you can go back to the straight to the level anytime though.
Right. I just need to maybe grind to get like an extra life or something. I'm gonna get my. And a guy has that password and save it.
Man, how did we do passwords before we had technology?
Oh, I had so many pieces of paper that just, you know, I'd write down something wrong and then just be a disaster. I think the first game I ever got that used them was, I think, Govelius for the Master System.
Great game, too.
And these are even worse because of, like, all the uppercase and lowercase and symbols and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, I during the NES era, I, like, somehow pretty much avoided games with passwords and saves. Like, my cousin had some, but I was, like, not really too into those games. Like, I was more into, like, really, like, you know, quick-to-the-action sorts of games like Mario and stuff. And it was, like, the first game that I personally owned that had a save feature was Super Mario Land 2. And it was, like, such a weird concept to me. Like, what? Save your file? I don't understand.
Yeah, I think the first one I got was probably, like, Final Fantasy or one of those Nintendo games.
Yeah, I wasn't into RPGs quite yet, but I've gone back and played a lot of NES games with saves and passwords, but back then I wasn't really into that stuff.
Yeah. Well,
that was fun.
That was a lot of fun. I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna try and finish it, like, this week. I feel like I can do it. I've made it pretty far.
Yeah, I mean, if you just put a little time into it, I mean,
I always say that after finishing, like, a big game, I say, you know, I just want to beat some smaller games, but it's always, like, smaller games on new systems that I always find myself going back to or starting up. So maybe I just need to play some Super NES and Genesis games that I haven't beaten yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's, I just need to do more of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Kind of made me want to play this one again.
So, Tri, when do you anticipate Switchers?
Let me do a little desktop share to show y'all the situation.
All right. Make sure there's nothing on there that we don't need to see.
What's that supposed to be?
I don't know.
Okay, can you see that?
No, not yet. Oh, no, it's not going to work. Hang on, it does not. It does not take the place of your thing, of your window. It doesn't work.
Oh, can you do something?
I mean, I can try. Let me see.
Yeah, it's not popping up in the stream, but I can see it on Skype.
Right. It's not going to let me do it. I have no idea how to do it. I don't want to crash anything.
Okay. Well, I mean...
Let me see if I can do this. No, maybe. Is it going to fit? Nope. It's not going to let me do it. I can just... I'm trying to fit it up there. It's not going to happen.
Oh, it's okay.
It's not going to let me do it. It's you can see the top of it. I can see your viewing monitor. If you want to do that.
Oh, okay. Can you see...
We can't see your timeline, but I can see a portion of your playback monitor.
Oh... Well, spoilers. This game is in that episode.
If anybody can guess what that is from that little... Let's see. Maybe I can move it over a little bit. Hang on. There we go. That's the best I can do. That's how you know. That's how you know it's an RGB episode.
It's an RGB episode. Well, we've snuck it into other episodes.
I know, but...
That's kind of cheating.
I'm surprised nobody has, like, made a list of all the different pop-ups of Wonder Boy and Monster World yet. Or Monster Land. Monster World is the Genesis one. I always
actually
mess
have I have in here somewhere.
Is it a Karnov?
No, I don't have. I can't get Karnov unless you get me Karnov.
I'll get you Karnov. We need to know what Randy's. Yeah.
Let's see. Where is? Check that out. I was able to get there and one click. I looked at my timeline. I'm like, I bet that's it.
Yeah, there it is.
I've got full on comparison right here.
Oh, nice.
But you can't see what they are.
Nope.
You can't see what they are.
What are they?
Secret. It's a secret. You'll have to watch the episode to find out what the comparisons are. But it's approximately halfway edited, but the majority of what I've done is like the toughest stuff. I need to finish up a small section in the middle here, but like the middle, I've edited this video very differently from how I normally do. Like normally I go pretty linearly. I pace out my audio and then I go to the beginning to the end for the most part. You know, I might do something in the middle here and there, but for the most part I go pretty well in a line. Mm-hmm. And this episode I kind of start in the middle and I've kind of built it out from the middle. Kind of gained the tough stuff out of the way first, and then I've got like one more section that I expect to be fairly involved, and then everything else should be easy-ish. I saw you say, I think it was on Twitter, that there'll be an episode midweek. I think midweek sounds extraordinarily optimistic.
Yeah, but I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I didn't know at the time, but I think it's going to happen.
My dream is for Thursday, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah, that's almost midweek.
Yeah, I mean, I really want this to be done because, like I say, I am so freaking mad that I'm not playing Persona 5 right now.
Yeah.
But I can't. I mean, I got to focus. I just got to focus. It's taken some work. It's, you know, for people who came into the stream late, here is the mess that this episode is creating.
Yeah, we kind of talked that like having everything out of sorts, it like really stresses me out.
Yeah, and it never really has me that much in particular, but now I kind of get where you're coming from. It's just like, it's unpleasant. I don't like it. I don't like all these wires being out. All these systems not being where they should be. Switching between all these switchers. I mean, the irony of this episode is I'm making an episode about streamlining your setup so that you can just play all of your systems without unplugging any wires and swapping anything. And the irony is, to create that episode, I have to do this.
You have to become that.
I have to go to the depths and then reemerge with the perfect setup. Yeah, it's not a great process. This is definitely an episode that we're making because we love you guys. you know, I won't deny this is not the most fun episode in the world to create. But there are some fun things I've done in the episode. I think there's some fun little bits that are maybe
a little comedy in there that's not specifically, you know, comedy. Just like, yeah, lets you have a little sensible chuckle.
Yeah, that's a sensible chuckle.
Yeah. Just like, oh.
Yeah, so, I've got some work left to do on it for sure. But I'm just going to persevere and do what I can and hope that the last bits fall in place somewhat easily. It's about, it's a little over 28 and a half minutes. I'm so thankful it's under 30. I was very much afraid of it being over 30.
Man.
You know, I don't know overall which is going to have been the tougher episode to make, this or the Frame Meister alternatives.
Two episodes. This will be during the other episode that you never want to think about again.
Yeah, that episode is just like, I was so glad just to be over that. You know, the crazy thing is, I think, is grueling. I don't know if grueling is the word, but it was a marathon making the Game Boy episode. Like, it was just took for freaking ever. But like, I also felt like engaged in the whole process of making that. Like, it was simultaneously one of the most difficult episodes to make, and also, like, in a way, one of the most fun. Like, it was like I felt like I was making something special, you know. It kept me motivated. Yeah, but this, you know, like I say, I'm doing some fun things in this. Like, it's not completely a miserable time, other than the fact that I'm not playing Persona 5.
Kurt, you're playing Persona, or did you just get it and you just haven't started it yet?
No, I've been playing it on and off this week.
I don't want to hear anything. No, Persona 5 okay. Fucking here.
If we say anything too much, then Atlas will find out and shut this stream down retroactively. Yeah,
that's true. That's crazy. That is a crazy thing that they're doing with the streaming. And I guess I heard that Puyo Puyo Tetris is going to have the same restriction.
Really?
Which makes no sense.
In Japan, so it's, yeah.
Puyo? Is it Sega?
Yeah, it's Sega also. It's really dumb.
Yeah, I saw someone that we know on Twitter who used to work at a publisher say that Japanese developers like don't get the whole streaming and sharing thing, and they don't understand how important that is in to a Western audience, and they're paranoid about losing the rights to their stuff, and they just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's weird that they're so crazy about it, but you know, I to some extent I can understand them not wanting to spoil the end of the game for people.
Right.
But it's going to get out there one way or another. And
I mean, you can
it should be up to the person who is playing the game
anyway. Yeah.
To try to avoid it. I mean, I've been very lucky. I don't want to jinx myself. But I mean, I haven't even had like a lot of games. I made it all the way through Final Fantasy 15 without having anything spoiled for me. Made it all the way through Zelda without having anything spoiled. Not that, I mean, even though we just talked about spoilers earlier, but I mean, I like to figure out things on my own or like with another person, you know, like.
Right. Well, I mean, you didn't have like story spoiled for you.
Right. Like I haven't had, I don't want to say it because I don't want people to be like, oh, this is it. And be like, now you have. I'm not going to say what else that I haven't played yet. It hasn't been spoiled for me.
All right. Well.
Well, Kurt, do you have anything coming up that you would like to share with the, you know, you're working on another book.
Yeah, that's going to be a Konami one. That's it's going to have Contra on the cover, and it's also going to feature all the Mystical Ninja article in there, and a whole bunch of other Konami stuff, as much as I could fit in. Most of
you
their
just announced
Nintendo
that recently.
Stuff.
Didn't you just like announce it like last week or? Where you showed the cover? I remember seeing it on Twitter, I think.
No, the cover's not done yet.
Okay. Maybe I saw it.
I don't know.
I saw something recent with, like, it had Contra on it.
Maybe.
Somewhere.
I don't know if he's sent out any sketches or anything. But, yeah, that's going to be coming out. I want to get it done for too many games. I'm not sure if it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Somebody's asking for a compile book. Which, I mean, I've already did all the shoot-em-ups for all compile stuff. I do kind of want to do one that focuses on like strictly mid-80s or 80s Japanese companies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of compile stuff would fit in there, but that's not on the horizon at the moment.
Yeah. What is the dream project that you would have?
The Falcom, to do with Ease and the rest of Falcom stuff. Yeah. And also Shin Megami Tensei. are those. Those are both that I'm slowly working on bit by bit, and I'll finish someday.
Mm-hmm.
I see Wes DeSantis is in the chat, who is the host of Second Opinion Games podcast, and I just want to let him know that he should keep an eye out in our next episode for the Second Opinion Games podcast T-shirt to make
you
an.
You mean the one that I'm wearing right now?
The one you're wearing right now. Well, no, not the one you're wearing right now, but the one I was wearing at the time I was shooting some B-roll of some G-Scarts, and he should keep an eye out for a reflection of the Second Opinion Games podcast and the glossy top of a G-Scart. So, somewhere in this episode.
Okay, sorry to, like, to derail so you have that. So Falcom is like the book that you wish, like, that's like your dream project, that and Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah, like I already got like any of the Konami stuff, is those are always my big ones. Otherwise I just kind of get you know, like I go into different phases, mm-hmm, of different stuff that I like. So, like, the Castlevania one was originally going to be the first one I did after the Adventure Game book, but just, like, at the time, I was just fascinated with replaying some of the late Sega stuff, so that's why that one ended up coming out first.
Mm-hmm.
So anything with Konami.
And you usually add, like, a ton of stuff to these books. I mean, some of them, like, early on, at least, they were, you know, kind of updated and elaborated upon versions of the articles from the website.
Yeah, sometimes they still are, mm-hmm, but it's like the shoot 'em up book. One of the first articles we actually ever did was for Compile Shoot 'em Ups, but that was, I think we might have even removed it from the site. But it is just like woefully incomplete, because at the time, like, we didn't really have, like, the Japanese internet wasn't as expansive, so there wasn't as much place to research.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't any emulators for, like, the PC 98 system, which there is now, so we had missed some stuff. So the one that's in the book is just, like, had to be completely redone from scratch.
Yeah.
Which took several months, but it was worth it because the Compile Shooter ups were just really, really, really cool.
Do you play a lot of stuff in emulators, or do you try to go real hardware as much as you can?
I do emulators just because, for taking screenshot purposes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, like, I have, like, all most of the systems and any of the games that I really like, I own.
Mm-hmm.
But emulators are just more convenient. It's also because, like, especially for Nintendo games, I'll play them on my PSP for commute, and so I could get some other work done. Like, right now we're working on a complete encyclopedia of the Famicom disk system. Just because it's, like, a topic that isn't really explored very much.
Right.
So I have my PSP loaded up with, like, every Famicom disk system game, slowly working way through it, even though most of the games on that platform are terrible.
Try wants to do an episode on the about Konami games on the Famicom disk system.
Yeah, anything that was good on the system were either done by Nintendo or Konami, and there's a couple of other decent games on the system. Otherwise, it's kind of a repository for shovelware. Like, the platform became outdated very quickly, so that's one of the reasons why it never came out here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I feel like it's relatively safe to do an episode about Konami games on the Famicom disk system and not
claimed. They're pretty crazy about, like, if cutscenes, like, we've gotten our streams flagged because of playing cutscenes.
There's some chance this stream could get flagged.
I don't know about this one.
Yeah, but maybe, I mean, who knows? Little cutscenes. I mean, that's, you never true know.
What was, somebody asked, what was really strange odd fact you came across in research for your book? Oh God. I don't want to say, cause I don't want to get his name wrong, but there's a, I need to look it up.
So is this pretty recent? This happened?
Yeah, it was, I was interviewing some guy and he let me know something.
Now I'm all interested in what it's going to be.
I just want to make sure it's okay. I don't remember his name. I'm trying to dig it up. But he's one of the programmers for the Ease games.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And And he was also one of the founding members of Quintet. Mm-hmm. But he's apparently in jail.
that sucks.
Yeah, like I'm not sure entirely what it's for, but it's some sort of white collar crime. No, I interviewed somebody else. It was just like he had just mentioned it offhand because I was tweeting about him. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, that dude was arrested a long time ago. I figured
that's
it was something
crazy,
shifty that had happened after Quintet kind of went under
or became Shade or whatever it was for like a minute. Was it Shade did Grandstream Saga?
Yeah,
which I did not know was part of that series until
it's kind of like
101.
Quasi. There's another game that's kind of sort of related to the Saturn, I think, but it was more just like world building. I can't remember the name of it.
Do you have you ever interviewed someone like Japanese developers for your stuff?
Every once in a while, I interviewed the guy who made the Wonder Boy games.
Let's talk about that after the chat because. Let's talk about it after the stream.
We love Wonder Boy games.
Yeah. Oh, me too. And the new one is coming out. Well, not the new one, but the remake is coming out like a week or two.
Yeah, and then Monster Boy should be pretty soon here too.
Yeah,
but I mean, I've kind of wondered. Like, I hear that it's hard to get access to Japanese developers, but I kind of wonder if that's more like they just don't want to talk about new stuff. But if you just talk to like someone about old stuff they made a long time ago, like I wonder if it's like not that big of a deal to them. I don't know.
It depends, because the guy who made most Wonder Boy games, Ryuichi Nishizawa, he owned his own company, Westone, so he doesn't, If there's somebody who owns their own company or isn't currently employed by one of the big companies, they love to talk about old sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's somebody that was still employed there, they're generally much more closed off. And since some of these people have been like at these companies for life, you'll never get anything from them. Or they can't say anything on the record because it's very controlled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
all right. Is that about wrap it up?
That's going to wrap it up for this week.
All right. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Kurt, thank you so much for joining us. I know we had been talking about it for a while. I think the last time I talked to you about it was like in July or something like that.
yeah, it was at Too Many Games, I think.
We talked about Too Many Games, and then we messaged about it like briefly in July, because I think you were traveling for 4th of July.
I was like, it has to be after Game of Thrones season. So.
yeah, that's right, because that's about when we had... Clint LGR on, and he was he's like, make sure it's after Game of Thrones is over.
If anyone's wondering what Kurt looks like, watch the Limited Run documentary. He's one of the people that we interviewed in the beginning of that episode.
Yeah, you say that digital downloads are very ethereal. They're very fleeting.
Yeah. I finally got some Limited Run games now too. I just got my Astabreed in.
Earlier this week. You know, I think it's pretty awesome. I was pretty excited to play it. Like, I hadn't played it digitally at all, and it's pretty cool. It's really hard to tell what's going on a lot of times.
I played it on the PC, and it was pretty impressive. I heard that they added some stuff to the PS4 version.
A whole new control scheme, a new mode that has a totally different control scheme. It's pretty cool. But it's very easy to get lost in the chaos.
Yeah, it seemed like that.
Yeah. All right. Is that going to do it?
I guess so.
All right. But thanks again, Kurt. And we'll see.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We will see everybody next week.
You're not, everyone.
Good night.
Night.